up, hockey fans? This is episode 125 of the ClapperCast. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by Sean. Sean, you must be rolling high after the Oilers are making it through to the second round. How's it going?
That was a stressful few games, and I am incredibly surprised that they made it through this first round, but happy nonetheless because we now get to witness a Battle of Alberta with both teams being competitive.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. What's like the first time since like
1991? 90s?
Yeah.
Yeah, 1991, Edmonton won in seven.
Yeah, so that's pretty exciting. I was pulling for Dallas, you know, the Dallas Jake Ottingers.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy to see Calgary win too and have that Battle of Alberta. That'll be really pretty cool, I think, to witness.
I mean, for a lot of us hockey fans, I mean, neither of us were even alive the last Battle of Alberta playoff matchup.
Yeah, it's just
this is pretty huge, and for most of that time the Battle of Alberta has just been like a historic rivalry. It's like we're trying to watch it now and it doesn't really have the same tone to it because one of the teams always sucked.
Yeah,
until the last like three seasons.
Yeah, so I mean it's gonna be an exciting series. I think one of the probably the best of the bunch there for the second round. We're going to take this episode and review kind of some of the opening series, give our take on who is going to move on from the second round and go from there. But, you know, before we dive into that stuff, there's a few announcements that got made of teams that either didn't make the playoffs or have just been eliminated. So, why don't we dive into some of those coaching announcements, Sean?
Yeah, so last week, the Islanders relieved Barry Trotz of his duties as head coach, and today they just announced that Lane Lambert, the longtime assistant to Barry Trotz, he's kind of followed him around for a couple of gigs here, Lane Lambert's going to be the next head coach of the Islanders.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I think the Pete DeBoer thing, were you surprised?
No, actually.
No, me neither.
No, I figured that he was going to go because, like, Vegas just makes changes as soon as there's, like, they fired their last coach when they were still in a playoff spot, so I can imagine missing the playoffs is, like, get your fucking shit out of here yesterday.
Yeah. I wonder if he found out on Twitter that he got fired. And then whoever his agent is posting a sword in the back.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it's like you said, Vegas has like the slight, you know, obstacle to their path to the winning a Stanley Cup, and they blow everything up. So, not surprised in the slightest. You know, interestingly enough, Gerard Gallant coaching in the second round right now. What happens if they kept that guy? You know,
right
when they had that like 3-game losing streak or whatever they had that exactly. They fired him for. You know, possibly they could have been still in the mix. Who knows? And then the Trotz one is weird. Like, got to the Eastern Conference Finals like 2 out of 3 years.
Well, yeah, he wins the Jack Adams' first year, Eastern Conference Final the next 2 years, turns the Islanders from the literally goes from the worst to the best defensive team in the NHL, like from his. From the year that before he took over to his first season. And then they have this season where they have like a 13-game road trip to start the season. Then they get a COVID outbreak right after that. And then they play 50 games in 99 days or something.
Yeah.
So I don't see that as something that's really worth firing the guy over, which is why you kind of wonder if there's something else going on. Like maybe he needed to step away for a bit and...
Well, and the fact that they hired Lane Lambert as head coach, it's like he's presumably not going to shake things up that much. So
exactly.
It's not really like a substantial difference.
Exactly.
In approach.
And Lamorello said, I thought they needed a new voice. So, like, when you say you need a new voice, why do you go and get the guy's assistant that's been with him for the last, like, better part of a decade, probably?
Yeah, it's interesting. Because, like, the Caps. You know, right after they won the cup, they didn't re-sign Barry Trotz, and they hired one of his assistants, Todd Reirden. Didn't work. Very obviously didn't work. So, is this kind of the same move? Are they just doing the same thing that the Capitals did? I don't know. Lane Lambert's got some great hair. Todd Reardon looks like, what's his name, Kevin from The Office. So, I mean, he's got a one-up there, but I don't know. It seems like a weird move. Like, it just seems very reactive, and like you said, it kind of looks like something else might have been going on there. I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting once playoffs is all said and done, you know, and there's going to be some movement out there for coaches. Might be some interesting candidates that are available. You know, does a team like Seattle, like, what are they going to do with Hakstol? Are they going to keep him around? Are they going to fire him? Do they bring in somebody like Trotz? Like, I don't know. And then the other coaching thing is just the Canucks announced that they re-signed Bruce Boudreau. I still don't know if it was like a 1 or 2 year deal or something like that, but
I think the assumption is that because Rutherford said he wanted Boudreau to have a full season with a team before signing a long-term extension, that this is just a 1 year thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. It seemed like a really, really great fit. Mm-hmm. He really got a lot out of players that were struggling and players that were actually already doing well, like JT Miller hit like a second gear once Boudreau came, and Elias Pettersson obviously like dramatically increased or improved his play offensively when Boudreau came over. So that was kind of a no-brainer to give him a full season. So I think that's a good move. And then, yeah, I mean, we'll see if there's some other coaches that, you know, end up losing their seat. And then, yeah, I mean, do you want to just dive into the round one results here?
Yeah, let's hop in for some recapping round one.
Cool. So Colorado showed that Daryl Sutter kind of called it a waste of 8 days. I think it was actually 7.
Yeah. Yes.
But, you know, Nashville, God love them, but, you know, without Saros, like, they really didn't stand a chance there.
No, there was nothing. There was nothing there. I didn't even think they were close in any of the games.
I don't think so either. So Colorado just walked over them. Sweep. The only sweep in the first round.
Okay, there was one game. Game two was a 2-1 overtime win for Colorado. Every other game, 7-2, 7-3, 5-3.
Yeah, so it's tough. You know, you have your starter who got you where you got you into playoffs, and he's not there to you know, push. So, I don't know. I didn't really watch that much of that series because I just thought it was just Colorado was going to walk over them. So, I don't know. Nothing really else to add to that one. So, Minnesota and St. Louis. We both picked Colorado to win that. I picked them in five. I think you picked 4 or 5.
I picked 5-2.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the only reason I picked 5 is I thought Nashville might win at home, and nope.
No.
So, yeah, Minnesota and St. Louis. St. Louis won that in 6. I was kind of surprised by that. I thought Minnesota was going to take that one. I picked them in 6. I was a bit disappointed because I actually had them as like an underdog team to go to the finals. And it's just kind of weird. Like, they... I don't think they played Talbot at all.
The last game, I think.
Hmm.
So he played at least once in the series. I think it was the last game.
So they really rode Fleury. And we talked about how their stats were like almost identical coming into the series.
Identically bad, yeah. Against St. Louis,
against St. Louis, yeah. But they had split like the last 11 or last 22 games, 11-11. So it's just kind of weird that they, you know, they just rode Fleury so much. And it's definitely disappointing because, you know, next year they're going to be screwed by salary cap penalties. So, you know, there's a lot of talk of, like, Fiala getting moved. Like, a lot of fans online think that that's, like, a foregone conclusion.
I think Fiala's guy they don't have room to keep.
Yeah, so they could be... very different looking team. There's going to be a lot of young players, I think, on that team that they're going to be banking on overperforming or something. And then, yeah, what do they do with guys like Dumba and you know, so anyway, disappointing for Minnesota, but kudos to St. Louis again. I didn't really watch a whole lot of that series.
Yeah, I think for Minnesota, this was a case of their depth just didn't show up. Kaprizov was there. What do you have, like 7 goals? I think he had
one assist.
7 goals and an assist in 8 games, or in the 6 games. But, you know, he scores 7 goals. Eriksson Ek has 3. And 6 other players have 1 goal.
Yeah, it's just not good enough.
You know, yeah, exactly. They score 16 goals in 6 games, less than 3 per game. That's not going to be enough. And then on the flip side, St. Louis, you know, we all thought Ville-Husso was going to be the main guy, but he didn't do the greatest in the games he played. But here's Jordan Binnington coming back from whatever slump he was in to put up 3 games with a .943 save percentage and a .167 goals against average.
Yeah, impressive.
So it looks like he's taking the crease back a bit, and he's probably going to be the starter heading into Colorado.
And then Tarasenko was lights out. I don't know if he led the Blues in scoring, but he had that game where he had a hat trick.
He had 6 points in 6 games, 5 goals. O'Reilly had 8 points. Perron had 9.
Yeah, Perron is a wonderful playoff performer. So, yeah, I mean, props to the Blues. I kind of thought they weren't going to show up, but, you know, they came in hot and, you know, didn't fail to disappoint. And then I guess we'll move on. Calgary ended up beating Dallas in a spectacular Game 7.
Oh, that was so tense.
Yeah. Right at the end of the first overtime, you know, I think it was like, well, like Onger had like 60 saves or something like that.
Approximately.
In Game 7. Yeah, like he played really well in that whole series. I think he set definitely franchise records for like save percentage and stuff, and very, very impressive. It was like a 9.58 or something like that in the series. And Markstrom too was really good too. Like that's all of these series were kind of like blowout games, and this series was like low scoring. It was
for the most part, yeah. No team had over 4 goals in a single game, which is a weird trend considering every other series had 7 or 8 goals in at least one game.
Yeah, it felt more like normal playoffs.
Blowout, yeah.
It was a fun series to watch. And, you know, Dallas, like, they didn't have Roope Hintz in the last game. So they're missing, like, one of the 3 guys on their team that can score. So, you know, it's kind of rough. You know, but, yeah, I mean, the Flames, like, they got pushed to 7 games, but, you know, that's got to be huge for their confidence coming out of that tough series against a hot goalie. And, you know, like Johnny Gaudreau got that penalty shot, sick goal. He got the series winning goal in overtime. You know, he's got to be getting a little bit of confidence now coming into this series. So it was a nice one. I liked watching all these games. It was a good series, and props to Dallas. They pushed him, and it's the team that, you know, I think you pointed out is, you know, the team that could possibly upset coming into
the
first round.
They were my, like, main huge, huge upset pick was Dallas for this reason, that they can just find a way to shut down. And you look at how Calgary played, and Calgary wasn't even bad. They didn't even shut Calgary down. It was just Jake Oettinger.
Yeah.
There is a point, I want to say, heading into the third period of Game 7, where Calgary had like 44 shots or 42 shots, and Dallas had 12.
Yeah.
And the game was, what was it, tied 2-2 at that point?
I think so. And then in the third period, I think Dallas actually outshot them. Like,
yeah, by like 1 or 2 shots.
Yeah, so it was like a really fun game. Like, it was like all Calgary, and then Dallas like just hung in there, and then forced OT, and then
they had a few, and Dallas almost won it a couple times in OT as well. There were a couple of very close shots, like off the post, side of the net. Markstrom made a couple big saves. Like, it almost went to Dallas.
Yeah, I think it was like right before the goal. Like, Dallas, when they were just before that, they were up in Calgary zone, and they put one off the post. So yeah, it was a close series, and, you know, for Dallas, I think it's not really like a loss, because it's like you're just kind of happy to be there this year, with the season that they had. And, you know, they've hopefully realized that Jake Oettinger should be their starting goaltender and they don't need to sign 500 goalies in the offseason.
Jake Oettinger's going to start next season in the ECHL.
Yeah. Like, I wonder if they keep Wedgwood and just have an Oettinger-Wedgwood tandem and then just, you know, hope he's gone. And I don't know if Hudobin's still even on contract, but he's in the AHL all year, basically. So
maybe. Are there any other aging goalies that need a contract?
Oh,
maybe,
I'm sure there will be.
Maybe they bring in Mikko Koskinen?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, I'm happy. I was kind of happy with either team winning this one because I like the Stars, and, you know, I do. I don't hate Calgary. I don't mind them, and I just wanted to see that Battle of Alberta. So this series was fun, and it was a good way to end the first round in that overtime.
Yeah, I mean, for me as the Oilers fan, I was okay either way. Like, I don't want to face either of these teams because there's bad blood with both of them. But, like, we get a Battle of Alberta, or we get to bring up childhood trauma with Dallas and Edmonton in the playoffs for me. So, you know, there's a storyline for either series. So I'm glad we get to see a Battle of Alberta. I'm glad I get to see a Battle of Alberta, and I think whoever wins between Edmonton and Calgary, like, I think the fans are the true winners.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a lot of bragging rights on the line in Alberta.
Big time. Some of those cities and towns in the middle of the geographical map of Alberta are going to be a bit of a bloodbath.
Yeah, what is it? Red Deer?
Yeah.
It's going to be like the war zone of where the battle lines are. Yeah. I mean, like, spoilers, but Edmonton made it through. Calgary, I had Calgary in seven, or no, Calgary in five, sorry. And I think you picked Calgary as well, right?
Yeah, I think I had five.
Yeah, so we both picked Calgary.
The web design here for the bracket challenge is a bit off, so I can't actually see my
pick. It's a weird one. So Edmonton made it through. They defeated the LA Kings in seven. You know, coming into playoffs, we both kind of said, well, you picked LA. I know that was a tactic on your end.
I'm definitely not superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
Yeah, I picked Edmonton in six, and I had said I don't think they're gonna make it easy on themselves, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they made it very difficult on themselves.
Yeah, and this was just crazy. Like, I really like this in all of these series except for that Calgary one. Like, it's just so mind-boggling that there's so many blowout games.
Mm-hmm.
For both teams. Like, it's just so bizarro. How can you beat a team like 10-0 in two games and then you get, like, shut out in the next game? Like,
well, like, game two, Edmonton wins 6-0. Game three, Edmonton wins 8-2. Game four, LA wins 4-0.
Yeah, it's so bizarre.
It's like NHL 22 sim engine stuff.
Yeah, very weird. So, yeah, I mean, scary that it went to seven, but you know, that they prevailed. It's a growing experience, I guess, for the Oilers.
It was. I think you're bang on with it being a learning experience for them. I think they showed a lot of growth in the series, and I think they've kind of picked out and started to kind of identify some of the main issues with their game and with their play. And, like, one of the big ones being the slow starts. Like, they were the worst, one of if not the worst team in the league for giving up the first goal. And they very often would do that in the first 5 minutes during the regular season. So they struggled big time with that. In, like, game one, they didn't start very well. In game four and five, they started terribly and were getting outshot by, like, 30, I want to say it was, like, 37 to 17 or something in the first period in those two games. And then it's just they finally kind of put it together by the end of the series, and game six and seven, they actually started extremely well. I think they had like 20 shots in the first period in one of those games. They figured it out a bit better, and they were able to hold on. And, you know, Mike Smith, to his credit, he cost them game one with that stupid play to try and send the puck up the middle of the ice from behind the net.
Yeah.
He cost them that game, but he rebounded and did well enough to get them through. He shut out two of the next six games, and he helped get them through the round. And then, I mean, obviously Connor McDavid, 14 points in the first round too.
Yeah, gross.
But he hit a new level in game six and seven. like he, especially with Draisaitl being hurt, McDavid just put the team on his back and he carried them. He was an absolute force.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a difference maker for sure. I think it's his performance is something that you know, another Canadian team is that we'll talk about in a sec is probably going to be pointing towards for what they want out of their star players, you know, be that difference maker, mm-hmm. that person that can put the series on, like put the whole team on his back and take the series. Absolutely amazing performance by him. Definitely the star of that that series.
Mm-hmm. I just want to give a special shout out to Cody Ceci. Dude goes and gets 7 points in the series, I think, and scores the series clinching goal in game 7. So
yeah.
Shout out to him. He's been a solid somehow first pairing defenseman.
Just as everyone predicted when they acquired him. Yeah. I picked Edmonton in 6. They won in 7. You picked not Edmonton.
I picked LA in 6.
Yeah. So I'm sure you're okay with the result.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll move on to the East, I guess. So Florida beat Washington in 6. And I picked Florida in 5. And somehow I'm disappointed that Washington did push to 6, but they really should have, like, pushed to game 7 or 1, which is crazy to say. But Washington dominated in a couple games, and then Florida had crazy comebacks.
Yeah, and that's been a thing for Florida all season, where they just randomly come back from, like, 4 or 5 goal deficits and win.
Yeah. So I didn't expect the Capitals to win, but I'm still disappointed in them, which is strange. But, you know, the one thing that I will say is that everybody else didn't think that they had a shot in this series. They thought they were going to get walked, and then they held the Florida Panthers to 0 power play goals in the series, which is crazy considering the power play that they have. That's a crazy stat. And, I think if they had Tom Wilson, probably would have went 7. He's one of the more important guys in that roster. And you know, he played all of 90 seconds in the series and got a goal and then got hurt and missed the entire rest of the series. So the way he plays, you know, it would have been a really different series. So, you know, I don't know. It's disappointing because they should have won. They definitely should have won at least. They should have at least forced game 7 because they won. They should have won that game that went to overtime. And it was tough. The first game that went to overtime.
Yeah. This one was a lot closer than anyone expected.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's like.
And, you know. The Capitals kind of held the series until that game 4 went to overtime.
Yeah,
you know, they were up 2-1. They had the game tied, and then they go to overtime and lose, and suddenly they kind of lose their edge.
Yeah, and that would have been a 3-1 series lead. Like, I'm sure the Capitals would have found a way to choke that, but still, like, that would have been pretty tough to come back from. It was really just Carter Verhaeghe and Claude Giroux had great series. Carter Verhaeghe had, like...
I think he had 12 points.
He had so many game-winning goals. So, yeah, he had a great series. And, like I said, Capitals had Tom Wilson. I think they might have just had enough to get over the line, but, they just didn't quite have it in Ovechkin. Had a shoulder injury the whole series, so he didn't really look that great.
Yeah, between Wilson's injury, Ovechkin's injury, and Backstrom's injury.
Yeah, Backstrom's
hip. That's three main people.
Backstrom's hip was like he came back after the surgery in the middle of the season, and that guy can barely move out there. Like I don't know if he's even going to be back next season. Like he said that it might not be manageable.
Yeah, he said he's going to have some big decisions to make, so that might be the end for him.
Yeah, it's tough. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, no one really had them moving on, but they were so close. They were so close. So it's tough, but what are you going to do? It's like the best team in the league. So
yeah, there's no real like shame, I guess, in losing to a team that's built like the Panthers are this season.
Yeah, it's just a tough pill to swallow, because I think that a lot of people are saying that that is the end of their window. And it's tough to not agree, but
yeah,
you know, they were so close to beating the best team in the league. So
yeah,
I got to give them a bit of props for that. And that power play,
totally,
holding Florida's power play scoreless for the whole series is remarkable. 5-on-5, different story, but, you know, that's tough. But Florida obviously played their game. You know, they're never out of a game. So, coming out of this series, I don't hate Florida. Like, it's not like a, I don't know, do you feel that way about the Kings?
No, I've got nothing towards the Kings.
Like, no animosity.
The only time I felt that was Anaheim in that series in 16 or 17.
Right, the Kessler goal, pushing the...
Yeah, what do we tell Corey?
Yeah. That was bullshit. But yeah, I mean, anyway, Florida moves on in 6. I had them in 5, so, you know, whatever. I want to bring up this next one, but I also kind of want to save it for last. Whatever, we'll just dive into it. So Tampa Bay Lightning beat the Toronto Maple Leafs in 7 games. What a shock.
Get it? Because the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I had Toronto winning in 7. I thought they were going to exercise the demons, and they did not.
Nope.
They really didn't.
Nope. They did okay, but then they did the exact same thing that they do literally every series. They have a series lead, and then they go and choke it away as soon as they have a chance to close it out. What is this, like, 5 straight times they've done that, I think? They lost a series after having a lead or something?
Yeah, I think they're like 0-10 in series.
Yeah, and they're 0-10 in series clinching games.
That's like fucking brutal. Like,
that's so bad. And you look at the ones they're losing when it's like they're up 3-1 in the series and then go and lose 3 straight. And then like this one, they play well all series and then they just screw it up at the end.
Yeah, just, it's like, where's your killer instinct? Like, mm-hmm. You know, you've been there so many times and have lost. Like, how do you not get over that? I don't know. I would hate to be a fan of the Leafs. Like, I wanted them to win. I was cheering for them. I wanted them to beat Tampa. I hate Tampa. And it's just, like, disappointing. I don't know. Like, what is it going to take? I think this is probably the best Toronto's going to be. This team that they had is probably the best version of the Leafs that they'll have.
Yep.
I don't think it's going to get better than that. Like, it's just...
They don't have the cap flexibility to get any better.
No, that was it. Like, that was the team. That was the team, I think. And it's like, I don't know. I've been a fan of the Capitals when they couldn't get past Pittsburgh in the second round. But, like, at least they won series in the first round and got to the second round and just kept getting knocked out by Pittsburgh. But, like, it's all on the line and you can't win the first round? Like, how are you ever going to win a cup with that group?
I think they now have the longest... they have the longest series winning drought in the league, I think. I think because Florida just won.
Yeah, and it was since, like, 94 in Florida, right?
Yeah, 96. And then Toronto now hasn't won a series since, like, 2004.
Yeah. I don't know. It's tough. Like, this year, it's not Marner. It's definitely not Marner. He was, like, really good for them.
Matthews was good.
Matthews was good, too.
He had a bunch of goals. I think Campbell was decent, wasn't he?
I mean, neither goalie was great in this series. But he was serviceable.
Oh, never mind. 897 save percentage, 315 goals against average. So not playoff.
Yeah, I mean, like, look at Vasilevsky's numbers too, though. They're not like outstanding.
True.
In that
true, because this too. Was a high scoring series.
Yeah, I think it's like, I don't know, like, what are you gonna do? All sports media in Toronto after Toronto came out and won that first game was like, oh, this is a totally different team, you know, like they've finally shown up. And it's like, it's one game against the team that has won back-to-back cups, and their goaltender has like posted a shutout in like 90% of games after he loses. So exactly. It's like, okay, like they haven't won the whole thing yet. And so, you know, there is a part of me that's like happy that this happens. I will admit that the Leafs just continual mediocrity, but I genuinely wanted them to win this series. And it's just so sad. Like,
yeah,
I can't imagine
now
being
you
kind of
have to start
Maple Leaf fan.
Yeah, now you have to start looking at the offseason. Like, are Dubas and Keefe staying? Does the team need to make a giant trade and shake up the core?
I think they do.
You know,
I honestly think that they do need to do a big shakeup.
And you know, I hate ragging on the guy because like he's basically just the whipping boy for everything. But it's like William Nylander had a solid series, but he's kind of been pointed out as someone who had like a half-assed effort on a whole bunch of plays.
And he is probably the most tradable contract on that team.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't think he has a no movement clause. Whereas, you know, a guy like Tavares, who I think had a decent series. I wouldn't say he was a difference maker to any regard, but you know, William Nylander makes $7 million. That's tradable. Two more years. That's a tradable contract. I could see him having interest somewhere. I think he's inconsistent, but like that's easier to trade off than Tavares for $11 million or I mean like they've got some bad contracts. So as much as like Dubas is like the wizard of signing all these guys for like less than $1 million, he's got like Peter Mrazek for 3.8 for two more years. You know, it's like, I don't know. I think Ilya Mikheyev's probably gone. Andre Kasha, an RFA. Engvall's an RFA. Spezza's a UFA. Blackwell's a UFA. Giordano's a UFA. Lyubushkin's a UFA. And Jack Campbell, UFA. Like, what do you do?
It's going to require a lot of tinkering and a lot of probably LTIR abuse.
Probably, yeah. Like, I think it was like, Kerfoot, Mikheyev, Kasha, and I think it might have been somebody else. But, like, between them all, they've got, like, one goal in, like, all of their playoff games. Like, they've just... And then when your top-end talent isn't pulling, like, Connor McDavid numbers, it's like... You know,
exactly.
Look at who won the series for Tampa. Nick Paul. Like, you know, like.
Yeah, Nick Paul, like game seven hero, goes and scores two goals.
Yeah. I see a lot of people blaming the whole series on like Justin Hall. It's like, I don't think it's his fault, but it's like.
No.
You look at their team. So like, and I don't want to turn this into like Leafs talk, but like. Tavares has got a no movement clause, so they would have to ask him to waive that to trade him, and then it's like good luck getting anybody to come there. Wayne Simmonds has got a no trade clause. Jake Muzzin, no trade clause. Morgan Riley has a no movement clause. TJ Brody, no trade clause. If they re-sign Giordano, they're probably going to give him a no trade. Justin Hall, modified no trade. Peter Mrazek, modified no trade. So it's like they're just dishing him out, and then it's like you're just screwed. So I genuinely don't think they're going to be as good of a team next year because they're going to be up against it. They're going to have to make some crazy moves, and then it's like, are guys really going to take a discount to play there just because Matthews and Marner are there? No, because you don't win. That's the reason people take pay cuts to play on Tampa or Florida or something like that, right? Like, that team can win. There's tax implications too, but it's like these guys want to win more than anything. Mm-hmm. So tough. Oh, well, Nick Robertson probably will come up and hear his name every fucking day.
The Lord and Savior himself.
Yeah. So anyway, enough Leafs, unless you have anything else you wanted to add about the Leafs here.
No, you covered that pretty well.
So kudos to Tampa, as much as I hate saying that. You know, they hung in there and they did what they had to do, and now they get to play Florida, and it's going to be a pretty exciting series to have that rematch. And I'm absolutely hoping Florida wipes the floor with them so we don't have to watch Tampa play in the finals. Again, please no. Please don't have them play against like a ninth seed somehow this year. Like for the last 2 years, they play like some Garbo team that shouldn't be there.
From out of left field, the Vegas Golden Knights are in the Cup final.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah, so it's like the Leafs did a lot of good things, but Tampa just had that edge, just that experience to, you know,
yeah,
we're not going to be here every single year, like season, like nothing's guaranteed, you know, like they've won the Cup back to back. They know what it takes to win a series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I saw this thing and it was like Braden Point showed more like emotion and anger and like determinedness in that game 7 than anyone on the Leafs. And it's like, he's a winner. Like he's been there and he might not play an opening game for the next series because of that, but it's like they made it through. So that's such a tough one to swallow for Leafs fans. And I know lots of Canadians are happy that the Leafs are out, but you know, that sucks. Like just imagine being a fan of that team and just like at what point do you just hang it up and say like, fuck this, like this team is going to make me like just cry every day.
We're probably going to have some jersey burning videos this offseason, I have to imagine.
Oh, probably. Yeah. There's got to be. Yeah. Yeah. All I can say about them now is just what an offseason they're going to have to
mm-hmm.
to stay competitive. Yeah. Well, I guess we'll move on. Carolina Hurricanes defeated the Boston Bruins just ever so slightly in 7 games.
Yep.
And it was close.
This one was close. This was a good series. You know, Max Domi, game 7 hero, 2 goals and an assist. You know, Boston fighting until the very last second. They almost tied it up with like 5 seconds left in game 7, but they just couldn't hold on. That's just good hockey. You know?
Yeah. Antti Raanta stepped up.
And that's kind of the main thing of the series is like Freddie Anderson's out, so it's Antti Raanta in net for the Hurricanes. He did amazing. You know, it looked like he might not even play. I think he almost got hurt in one of the games, or I guess yeah, he played 6 games. Pyotr Kochetkov. Sorry. he played in a couple of games too, but I mean, Raanta, 927, 237 goals against average. So, you know, he's done a formidable job holding the Hurricanes in there. And then you have, interestingly enough, their 2 leading scorers are defenders. Slavin and D'Angelo both had 8 points in the series.
Yeah, defense. I will say kudos to Boston Bruins fans for, what was the chant against Tony D'Angelo? You're a racist. Tony's a racist or something like that.
Wasn't the fan one, fuck you, Tony, and then Marchand said you're a racist?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I love that. Both of those I love. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so shout out to Bruins fans.
Yeah. 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 So, Yeah, just a close series. Could have gone either way. I had picked Carolina in six, but they finally beat Boston. Just took seven games.
Yeah,
so
this was one of their, one of their demons is that Boston had beat the Hurricanes in a couple consecutive playoffs. In series is that most people pick Carolina to win, Boston managed to find a way. And Carolina finally kind of exercised that demon.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, the trend in this series, like the score in the games, 5-1, 5-2, 4-2, 5-2, 5-1, 5-2. And then a 3-2 in the last game. That's an interesting trend line where it's like the games aren't that close, but the series overall was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of was like that in a few other series where it's like blowout, 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 but it's like not all the same way. It's just very, very strange that that's how it went down. It seems like there's always kind of like a through line in the opening round where it's like one year there's like a bunch of overtimes, you know, and there's like they're all going long overtimes or whatever. And then this year it's like, nope, blowouts. That's the pattern, yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of weird goalie situations going on in a lot of these series. So maybe that's to explain it, but yeah, very, very strange. But I think you picked Boston in this one, right?
Yep, I did.
And the last series here, New York Rangers defeated the Pittsburgh Penguins in seven. Pittsburgh was up 3-1. And then they weren't. I love it.
You know, shout out to the Rangers. Like, they managed to take advantage of a situation that they needed to all step up in. You know, this was such like an exciting series. There were so many times where you tune into the game for like 5 minutes and you'd see five goals.
Yeah.
I was on a treadmill at the gym for like 12 minutes. And in the span of that 12 minutes, and most of that was an intermission, there were four goals.
Yeah,
like,
insane.
This series was so exciting in that regard. And no lead was ever safe because it's like Pittsburgh would score two early goals and then the Rangers would tie it up a few minutes later and then Pittsburgh would score again and the Rangers would score again. It's just these flurries of goals. And, you know, later in the series, we ended up with Louis Domingue as the Penguin starter because DeSmith was out with an injury as well. And then Crosby's out, and it's like Pittsburgh is still holding on. They're still staying in it, but those injuries started to pile up, and this is the situation the Rangers had to take advantage of, was a depleted Penguins lineup. And this time, finally, the Penguins weren't able to fill in their roster with complete randoms and still dominate.
Yeah, I mean, Domingue, like, took over in overtime of game one. And then, you know, it's like, he's a good goalie, but it's like, he's a goalie where it's like the caliber, it's like, maybe they just don't have a book on him because they weren't expecting him to play. And then when they see like, okay, this is the type of goalie he is, you know, then you can start scoring more. And then, yeah, interestingly enough, like Jarry came back for game seven. And they had been playing Domingue the whole series, and then you lose.
You know, Jarry comes back. He hasn't played in a month, and the guy can barely walk, and he still goes in and manages to get the team to overtime. So you hope that he was actually healthy enough to play, and that because I think he had a broken foot, so it's like you hope that's actually fixed enough that it's, you know, not going to cause further damage or be one of those things where it's like he should have sat out. But
well, and Crosby, too, that hit from Trouba.
Mm-hmm.
You know, should well, apparently, he have been playing?
Apparently it wasn't a concussion, and he actually had medical clearance to play in game six, but Hextall wouldn't let him. So, you know, I would like to trust the medical staff, but it's kind of like he's got a history of this type of a thing happening, so it's kind of it's concerning even if he had clearance.
And one other thing, too, is that Pittsburgh's penalty kill sucked. They allowed 6 on 19.
Ooh. Yeah, and that's also a testament to the Rangers' power play. That was kind of one of the main difference makers why I picked Pittsburgh in the first place, was that I didn't think there was going to be that many power plays. but yeah. there's actually a lot of penalties being called in the playoffs this year, and that benefits the Rangers because they're not good 5-on-5, but it's that power play that they take advantage of.
Yeah, and that's how they scored the series winner, right?
Panarin exactly.
On the power play. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of penalties, lots of game sevens, and lots of blowouts. That was kind of the summary of round one. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly a Rangers fan, but, you know, once the Capitals were eliminated, you kind of knew that the Penguins would be eliminated because they have to meet at some point if either of them's going to win the cup. So, you know, I'm just happy that they're suffering together at least so that we can't one-up each other.
They can ride off into the sunset together.
Yeah, exactly.
Washington and Pittsburgh.
The window closing. interestingly enough, apparently the Penguins tried to lowball Letang and Malkin with extension offers, and Crosby's mad about it. So,
oh, really?
Keep an eye on that. Yeah. So, second round matchups, we've got Colorado versus St. Louis. Who are you taking in that one?
See, this one's actually kind of difficult for me. For some reason, I just have this like gut feeling that St. Louis is a team that could potentially cause an upset here. But it's hard to pick against a rested Avalanche team.
Yeah.
The Avalanche team this year, too. So I think Colorado takes this in six games. But, I mean, if Binnington is back to cup-winning Binnington form, then there's going to be a real challenge here, and it's going to be a close series.
Yeah, I think Colorado in six as well. They just seem to be rolling, scoring a lot. Yeah, not ruling St. Louis out, but like I think Colorado's just going to be the better team here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, all right, this is your moment, Sean. Battle of Alberta. Who are you taking?
I've got Calgary in six for this one as well.
I see what you're doing.
Partly that, like, I'm not physically able to say Edmonton is going to win a series because the last two times I have, they lost. But also because I think Calgary just has that little bit of an edge in a couple of positions, notably in net. Yeah. That, you know, Jonathan Quick was great. Like, he found some of that magic that helped him win two cups. Eight to 10 years ago. But Jacob Markstrom is better, and he's a big game goalie. He's a game changer, a momentum changing goalie. And I think that advantage, like Markstrom versus Mike Smith / Mikko Koskinen, is enough to give Calgary the edge in general. And I just think the Flames forward depth is a little bit better and a little bit more reliable, especially if Draisaitl is dealing with a high ankle sprain.
Yeah. Yeah, I am also. So how many games are you picking?
Six.
Calgary in six. Yeah, I'm gonna pick Calgary in seven, and I just want to see seven games.
I do too. I hope this one goes seven. I just want to see the full course.
I think Calgary's got an edge on Edmonton. I just think that they're just perhaps built for playoffs a bit better.
Yeah. So
than the Oilers are.
Yeah, and it plays into their team strategy or the way the team plays. You saw how Calgary dominated Dallas in the shot clock, and they were just overwhelming the Stars, and that's a thing that Edmonton has trouble with, where they get overwhelmed by teams a lot. They tend to kind of sit back and be a counterattack team rather than control play, and Calgary's great at controlling play, so you can kind of imagine that it's going to be pretty fast paced, but Calgary's not going to have too much trouble controlling the play.
It is going to be interesting just how, like, there's a few guys that have played for both teams in this series. So you've got, like, Milan Lucic on the Flames, and then you've got,
Mike Smith, Chris Russell.
Has Derek Ryan?
Yep, Derek Ryan went from Calgary to Edmonton as well.
So it's kind of interesting to see, like, you know, a couple guys that have played for both out there. But, yeah, I mean, like, that Game 7, like, Toffoli finally scored for the Flames. Gaudreau seems to be, you know, being able to be the difference maker. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, the skill matchup and then, like, the playoff kind of heroes, like who those be, who those are in this series. Like, you know, is a guy like Matthew Tkachuk gonna play, like we saw him get incredibly distracted by Klingberg in that series.
Like John Klingberg of all people.
Yeah. Known goon, John Klingberg, yeah. But like, you know, like Zach Kassian, like there's just like,
yeah, I'm concerned about that because it's happened in the past, that thing between Kassian and Tkachuk, and it just throws the team off. Kassian goes and takes a bad penalty because he gets agitated by Tkachuk, and then Calgary scores and the game's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so
it's a real concern.
It's gonna be interesting to see special teams, because like you look at both these teams and there's a few guys who take a lot of penalties. Like Zach Kassian, Tkachuk, like Yamamoto seems to always be taking stupid stick penalties. Like, how's that gonna play out in the series? Is the power play gonna be like the determining factor of the series, or is it gonna be more 5-on-5? Who's reffing it? What's the standard? What's it gonna be like? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's gonna be fun. I'm really looking forward to seeing it, and I'm really looking forward to seeing like all the fans like just trash talking each other and just
as
a neutral third party. Yeah. So I think Calgary takes it, but ultimately I'm okay with either team. And I'm probably on the bandwagon of whatever team comes out of this series to go all the way.
Mm-hmm.
So go from the Battle of Alberta to the Battle of the Sunshine State, Florida. Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. I'm going to pick Florida in 6 on this one. I'm going on their train here, and I think that you know, they kind of slayed the beast of getting one playoff series under their belt. And, you know, Bobrovsky's looking good. You know, they got to get their power play going. But I feel like if they just play their game, and they're never out of it. Like, they've got so many weapons on their forward core that I just think that they'll end up taking it.
I can't remember if this was, pardon me, in game 6, but Ekblad and Chiarot were both off the bench for a while. I can't remember if they're hurt or if they're fine. They just sat for a bit.
And they came back.
They came back, okay.
Yeah,
Chiarot, because that would be huge.
Blocked a shot, and then Ekblad, I think, just got destroyed by Ovechkin on a hit. And he was gone for longer than Chiarot. Chiarot got hurt kind of in the end of the second, I think it was, something like that. Right before the intermission, but I think he came back. So they're probably feeling it. But I think they're okay.
Okay. So I also go with Florida in this series. I take them in 7. I think, like you mentioned, like Florida playing their game, they know they're never out of a game, and that's a key point, because the way Tampa Bay plays, the Panthers are going to find themselves down in games. But the Panthers know, and they've shown that they are able to come back from massive deficits and just turn the game around in the third period. And they just have to, you know, they're going to be able to utilize that to their advantage and probably come back in a couple of games, whether it's just a small 1 or 2 goal deficit, just enough so that they're going to be able to wrestle just enough games away. And like you said, their team is built so strong this year. They've got so many players performing at such a high level. They've got like their scoring depth with Verhaeghe and Giroux having amazing series. You know, Huberto and Barkov are doing well. So top to bottom, they're kind of primed for this. And I think this is their year to kind of go all the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love for Joe Thornton to get in there just for a game somewhere. But I don't know if he's going to... But yeah, they're just such a deep team, and I think that they're poised really well to take it. They really do have to get their power play going, though. 0-0 for like 20 or whatever it was in that series against the Caps. A really shitty Capitals team too. You know, they should probably turn that around a bit. hopefully Sam Bennett doesn't take a bunch of dumb penalties like Sam Bennett does and cost mm-hmm. them some games. But yeah, just the depth in their roster is gross. And, you know, Carter Verhaeghe might have a chip on his shoulder about Tampa. So maybe he'll keep his absolutely crazy hot streak going. And then I guess lastly here, we've got Carolina versus the Rangers. And I'm going to be honest with you. This is probably the series I'm going to watch the least.
I've got nothing particularly huge invested in this one either. Which is odd because, like, it's probably... if because of the other matchups, the rivalries and two other matchups, it's going to be good hockey. But it's just the one that's, like, it's the outsider. It's kind of the wild, like, the random one.
Yeah. Yeah, I just... I don't like particularly like Carolina, and you know, the Rangers are kind of, used to be kind of a bit of a rival to the Caps, so I probably won't watch very much of it. But I am going to pick the Rangers in six. I think that kind of similar to Florida kind of winning that playoff round. I think it's been a bit for the Rangers to have a bit of success in the playoffs, and I think that they're just going to keep rolling. Mm-hmm. And Antti Raanta did well against the Bruins, but not, like, unreal. And I think that the Rangers just have more scoring threats than Boston does, especially on the power play. So I'm going to pick the Rangers, see what happens. Who you got?
I'm going to lean to the Carolina Hurricanes in five games in this one.
Oof.
For some reason, I just feel that the structure and the systems and the experience that the Hurricanes have making playoff runs like this is just going to overwhelm the Rangers a little bit. The Hurricanes so far are mostly healthy, contrary to the Penguins that were missing, you know, key parts of their lineup and down to playing a third string goalie. I think Freddie Anderson is actually almost back. I thought I remember seeing something about that. So even if he's not, you know, Antti Raanta, like you said, he was decent. It'll be a challenge for Carolina because of how high-powered the Rangers' offense is compared to Boston. But the structure, the depth, the play style, the group that Rod Brendamore has, I think they're just going to overwhelm the Rangers. They might be a bit discombobulated, being kind of a new playoff team per se.
Hmm. Okay. So we're pretty aligned in three out of four series, and just that mm-hmm. one Metro Division matchup we're not. So we'll see what happens. I'm incredibly excited for the Battle of Alberta. That feels special that we get to watch that.
Yep.
It's almost...
I'm, I'm excited and terrified.
Yeah, as you should be, probably. It's almost too bad that the last two Canadian teams have to face off against each other.
True.
We have the Toronto Maple Leafs to thank for that, I guess. So thanks, Leafs fans. Way to go.
That wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.